Blog Talk Radio. Of the group stage is all over, but the shouting. One more round of the group stage before we get to the quarterfinals. But before we even get to that talk about this final group stage matches that's going to start tomorrow night in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at Lincoln Financial Field, this was absolutely probably the two best matches we have ever seen. One because of individual brilliance, and the other, it's just Lionel Messi. Along with Carter Kirschnayer of World Soccer Talk and Juan Mesa of El Diario, I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, special Feuerstein's Fire edition of the Copa America Centenario Day 8 Review. We're going to go straight to what we saw in Chicago at Soldier Field. Juan, Lionel Messi does it again, and even though Panama was really, it was more about being a man down. From the middle of the first half all the way through the end, Messi steps onto the field and he pulls that off.
That's the best player in the world for the past 10 years, and probably is going to be the best in history. It's arguably the best in history. And, I mean, that was the fantasy that the organizers of this tournament had, just to see Lionel Messi on the field doing these things. I mean, he came in after, in the 62nd minute, scored a hat trick in 20 minutes or so, and got an assist too, a secondary assist,
yep.
That long ball that he put to Rojo, and then Rojo assists Kun Agüero. I mean, what else you can ask? I mean, and you cannot blame Panama. They were doing their best. They played with 10 men down for most of the game. Unfortunately for them, because, I mean, I think the tactical approach they had for this game was the correct one. And they have improved a lot. We know that. That's the reason they are playing Copa America Centenario, because they're becoming one of the top teams in Central America. And but it's not enough. I mean, it's not enough when Leo Messi was there. I mean, Argentina was not playing, was not having the best game today. But once Messi was there, everything was fixed. There was a tactical change when he came in too. But I mean, I'm not gonna take all the show. I mean, to see what you guys think.
Well, Carter, go ahead. I mean, let's be honest here. When Messi stepped in the 61st, 62nd minute in Soldier Field, I mean, you felt this was going to be a huge change in this match. And I mean, it doesn't matter where you give him the ball on the pitch. It doesn't matter if he takes a free kick and he splashes the back of the net inside the near post. It doesn't matter what he does with the ball, because every time he touches it, it just turns to football gold.
Yeah, that's certainly true. But, for a while, it looked like Panama was soaking up the pressure and doing okay down a man. This is the same sort of situation that Gomez's side found themselves in last year in the semifinals of the Gold Cup against Mexico. Obviously, they were up a goal in that match, but having Gabby Torres sent off, and they were in a position where they had to defend very, very tightly, keep their shape, stay organized, and they almost saw that game out. And we remember how farcical that whole thing became with Mark Geiger, the American official, and how that kind of fell apart on them. But Panama, I think, were smarting from the way the Chile-Bolivia game ended, feeling like their advancement to the next round was kind of being taken from them again. Blas Perez has a reputation for being a bit of a reckless player. saw that again today, unfortunately, tonight. Coming off the two-goal effort in Orlando the other night to do what he did tonight. Panama has a very, very good record, a better record. I've mentioned this time and again on our Eurocopa podcast on World Soccer Talk. Panama has a much better record in knockout tournaments on U.S. soil than Costa Rica or Honduras or Jamaica or Haiti, the other nations that from CONCACAF. Well, Honduras did not qualify for this, but the other nations that we tend to perceive as nations that do well in CONCACAF, their record in World Cup qualifying isn't quite as good as those countries. They don't have the home kind of home field advantage that Costa Rica had for years at Saprissa Stadium. Honduras has developed in San Pedro Sula. So they haven't qualified for a World Cup, and we remember how it ended for them last time. But they're a tough out in a tournament like this. And I'm not surprised they gave Argentina such a game until the Messi magic came. I should point out Messi's second goal, the third Argentine goal overall, was I believe was offside. Linesman missed that call. That doesn't change the result. That doesn't change the scenario now, which is that Panama has to beat Chile in the final group stage game to go through. A draw would put Chile through, and I know we're going to talk about Chile-Bolivia, which I'm very excited to talk about in a few minutes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was a fantastic match as well. But, Juan, I have to say about Panama, and you're right, you know, they didn't lose this match because they weren't technically strong or anything like that. They lost because they were down a man. I have to say this, though. I am a little disappointed in Panama because even though they played strong against Bolivia in the first group match in D, you know, they basically took the bait. The players took the bait from what Javier Mascherano did. And, of course, the second yellow card, I have to say, very, very disappointed in Anibal Godoy. I mean, that was an unnecessary, whether you want to call it a right forearm into his marker's face. It looked like he threw a right-fisted punch into his marker's face. It was deserving of a straight red. Fine, second yellow became red, but still, you can't do that when you're taking on one of the top nations in world football like Argentina if you're trying to upset them for the very first time.
And I think that's like what Panama has to work, like the federation, they need to work for the years to come is on that technical defensive skill, because for me, the best player today, the best Panama player on the field tonight was Alberto Quintero. I think he was managing the counterattack. He made a mistake in that play that they have, like, to at least get a goal. Like, Mascherano beat him. But he was also very clean with his game. He was playing soccer. He was not trying to be brave. He was not trying to get into fights, clean tackles. So I think like they need to follow that kind of example that Alberto Quintero gave tonight, because you cannot defend like that. I mean, you're going to get a yellow card. Like tonight, they lost two games, basically. I don't think they're going to be able to manage Chile when they're not going to have Blas Perez because of a yellow, the second yellow. They're not going to have Baloy. They lost Godoy. And they lost Pimentel because of an injury. Unfortunately, I heard that it's like he fractured his hip. And they took him to a Chicago hospital tonight. That was very unfortunate for Pimentel. But, yeah. The thing is that they need to get better in defensive plays. I mean, it's like you can be tough, but you need to get smarter with the fouls that you make. And that was I think that's like a thing that they need to work. I believe that with Gomez they became a little bit more tactical, and I mean, they were controlling the game until the Godoy red card. I mean, they were down in the score, but they were controlling. So there seem to, but yeah, I mean, definitely they, I don't think that against Chile they had a chance, especially for because of the kind of players they lost tonight.
I agree with you there, Juan. What about you, Kardik? I mean, it looks like, you know, you've lost Blas Perez on a yellow card suspension. You've lost Philippe Beloy on a yellow card suspension. Godoy on a one-match suspension on yellow cards and sending off. And unfortunately, an injured player. That's four players for Panama that they're going to have to scramble to take on Chile and try to upset the defending Copa America champions from the tournament last summer.
Right, the two most experienced players, Beloy and Blas Perez, in terms of age. You know, Gabriel Gomez, I guess, is probably up there about the same age as those two guys. But those two guys suspended, gone. I think it gives an opportunity for Luis Tejeda, who has been good at the international level, very different kind of striker than Blas Perez. But really, he's going to have to get them goals now, or Gabby Torres or Roberto Nurse. But it's not a sure thing with any of those guys. And then in the midfield, I think without Godoy and without Pimentel, who's injured, and as Juan gave us that update, he won't be playing obviously on whenever the Tuesday, I think, is when this next set of games is for these guys. They're in trouble. Beloy, it gives them the leadership and kind of the shape and the discipline at the back. Although, as Juan points out, they lost that shape today. And I was very disappointed in Harold Cummings. He's a player I like a lot. You've heard me talk about him in the past, younger player. We talked about him a lot during the Gold Cup last year and during qualifying, tail end of qualifying in CONCACAF now 3 years ago. Gets really, really poor today. They've got a lot in front of them now, and it's unfortunate. They're probably going to crash out of this tournament. They had it set up beautifully for them, and just rash tackles, indiscipline, the sort of things that really didn't expect from them. There's a bit of chippiness that's coming to this Panamanian side. Kind of a victimization complex, which you can understand the way that they were eliminated from qualifying for the World Cup with the United States getting those two very late goals in Panama City in 2013. Then last year's Gold Cup semifinal, which I think everybody can see, including Andres Guardado, who admitted publicly he thought about missing that penalty kick because he felt it was unjust that he'd been awarded the penalty. But as a professional, Guardado did what he needed to do, which was put the ball past Pinedo, and Mexico went on. But they feel like they've been victimized. Today will just add to that, even though, look, Blas Perez was stupid. Godoy was reckless and silly. And Beloy was late on his tackles and was playing recklessly as well. And that, especially from him, I don't expect that. So they did it to themselves tonight. Although it will just feed that kind of victimization complex, which has permeated Panamanian football for the last few years. So it's unfortunate, the result. But they did it to themselves today. Argentina full value, considering everything that went on.
Absolutely. Okay, gentlemen, let's go to the first match of the day. And that was, of course, Chile as the host nation. The team wearing... the defending champions, I should say, the Copa America of last summer. They took on Bolivia, and once again, Bolivia makes a match out of it, but it is 2-1 to Chile. A very fantastic goal by Arturo Vidal, of course, blasting it through the keeper, to make, and especially through two defenders as well, to make it 1-0. But how about probably... I mean, I don't know if you're going to outdo what Messi did, but definitely this is a goal of the tournament for me, Juan. Yasmani Campos in the 61st minute. How did he put a freaking bend in that ball and it violently dips inside the upper far 90 and beats the keeper? That is a shot that I never thought I saw. I mean, to me, maybe it doesn't. Well, I'll say this then. I think that goal outdoes the Cristiano Ronaldo goal when he scored playing for Manchester United in the UEFA Champions League against his former club in Sporting Lisbon of Portugal. That is where I will say this goal will outdo that one.
It was, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, this is a guy that plays in Kuwait, and he scored that amazing goal against FC Barcelona goalkeeper, Claudio Bravo. It's like, I mean, you never expect something like that to happen. Bolivians, they always have like this, they always had a player that knows how to take a free kick. Like from the great team from the 90s, Diablo Echeverri and Platini Sanchez. And then the actual coach, Julio César Valdivieso, was great taking free kicks when he was a player. He was a nightmare during the qualifiers, during the World Cup qualifiers in La Paz. And it seems that the Campos just took that responsibility for this generation with that amazing goal. And definitely, it's going to be one of the goals of the tournament, along with the Paraguayan goal against Colombia, the Victor Ayala goal. That was a great goal too. And weird game, right? That was a very weird game. I think Chile was supposed to do better. I think that the pieces are not being put together in the right way by Juan Antonio Pizzi. I mean, Chile a year ago was a team that was playing great. Great soccer, exciting, very energetic under Jorge Sampaoli. But then after the FIFA game and many scandals came in the Chilean Federation, and they let him go. They brought Pizzi, who is, is someone with some experience as coach. I mean, he has coached in Spain, Mexico, Chile, Peru, Argentina, but it seems that there's not a good communication yet between the team and what he wants to put there, because this is a Chilean team that looks very deorganized. I don't see them playing like a clever attacking soccer. They missed too many chances, and they let, I mean, Bolivia was basically just sitting back, trying to get a counterattack. They don't have the players to do counterattacks. They found that foul, and Yasmani Campos put them in some trouble with that golazo. But but I think Chile deserved the win, besides whatever happened with that penalty. Jair Marrufo, representing United States refereeing, unfortunately, in that call. But I think Chile deserved the win, no matter what. But like, I mean, it's definitely a game that is going into controversy because of that call at the end of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cardiff, obviously. You know, that's one of those things where, you know, if you want to compare what DeAndre Yedlin did, which that was a clear penalty because he did put his arm in an unnatural position. I don't know if this was in an unnatural position, but did he just stick out his arm to, you know, try to be bigger? Or, I mean, it looked like the ball got him on the top of the shoulder.
Yeah, I think it was a very bad call. Jair Marrufo is an official that has had some controversy here in Major League Soccer, in the little bit even he officiated down at NASL level, second division level. There's been controversy about him. He's a pretty good official, but there have been incidents like the Blanco incident. Remember years ago when he changed,
of course,
he wanted Cuauhtemoc Blanco's shirt after a game. So Bolivia certainly feels hard done. You know, back to the goal though. I agree with Juan. One of the spectacular goals of this tournament. You know, we had two great goals today. The other great goal being the Payet goal in the to win the game for France in the Euros in the opener, the 89th or 90th minute against Romania, who had fought so hard, played so tactically to try and get that draw. So it was great to see that goal launch that tournament. That could be one of the goals of that tournament. And then maybe the goal of this tournament, it's going to be tough to top this one, happened just a couple hours later. Summer of soccer, right? We've got between the Euros and Copa America. But unfortunately, you can have those spectacular goals, like the goal in France and the goal in goal for Bolivia tonight. And then it just seems like those things get overshadowed when you start talking about officials influencing games, changing trajectory of results. When it happens at the club level, it really hurts, but you can say that they're whichever league it is, they're 30 games, 35 games, 38 games, and it's influencing one game. But when it's in a group stage game of a major competition like this, and Bolivia has had, and I just want to reiterate to people the kind of trip to the United States Bolivia has had. Okay, so they play friendly against the United States in Kansas City. They're stuck, can't get out of Texas because of flooding. They're not able to practice. They essentially get to the place where they're playing the United States about an hour or two before the game. Never get to train. They went ahead and played the game. They didn't. They maybe shouldn't have. And they get beat 5-0. Then they travel for their Copa opener to here to Florida, where I am, to Orlando. And we get hit by a tropical storm. I think people who follow me on Twitter and follow my writing and podcasting realize that I got stuck in the storm too and didn't make it to the game, the Bolivia-Panama game. They were forced to play without training on the pitch, and they get beat 2-1, and they played so well in that game. Now they come here to this game, and they finally have, like, proper training. They finally are able to play into a game, and they play so well. Although I do agree with Juan, Chile was probably the better team. But they played, in their minds, well enough to get a draw, and then this happened. So it's just been a terrible trip for Bolivia. And we know Bolivian football is in a very bad place right now, and they haven't been at a high level in South America since the late 90s, since mentioned El Diablo, Marco Echeverri, since he retired. They haven't been at a high level for about 15 years. So this could have been a tournament to kickstart it. This result could have kickstarted it against the reigning South American champions. And it's just tough to see it decided on a call like that. I mean, it's just it's one of those things that as football fans and as people who cover the sport, we just hate to see results go this way. And you know 10 years from now when we talk about this Copa and we talk about Chile, we're going to remember how they beat Bolivia. And even though, as Juan correctly points out, they were the better team, we're always going to think about that call. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's true, guys.
And, guys, the other unfortunate event in the game was the lack of a protocol for the Ronald Aquino contusion after he got kicked in his head by Eduardo Vargas. Like, what happened there? Where was the protocol? Why he came in? Why he came back to the field?
See, that's the thing that I think, you know, CONMEBOL, UEFA. I mean, all confederations need to when you're having a tournament like this, especially if it's both with CONMEBOL and CONCACAF, they got to have people out there and say, hey, listen, he can't get back on the field. He needs to be checked out. I mean, it's the same thing that happened in the World Cup with Uruguay, and it's a shame. It's just a shame that, you know, you can't let him fight against the doctors and he throws himself back onto the field or just say, yeah, okay, you're fine, go back out there. I mean, either way, that can't happen, Kardik.
Yeah, in fact, we had an incident like this in the Bolivia-Panama game, where a player didn't leave the field, and it was one of those things where I think they got very, very fortunate. And, in fact, that player, I believe, if I remember correctly, I can't remember who it was, was still bleeding. and it wasn't administered properly. So, yeah, this is something that officials have to get together on. And we heard, again, during the Euro broadcast today, Taylor Twellman was on the call with Ian Dark, the whole issue of head injuries come up and protocols for that. And Twellman's not satisfied with what UEFA's done going into the Euros and not satisfied with what Tom DeVaux and CONCACAF have done going into the Copa America to address that during games. So that's another thing we have to look out for as the tournaments roll on. I mean, we're into week two of the Copa now, and Euros just started today, but that we might have some of those head injury circumstances. And there are no, according to Taylor Twellman, who knows this concussion something better than anyone, there are no real good protocols in place from the governing body to deal with that.
Absolutely, and that's the one thing that has to be fixed here. This concussion protocols must be in place, and it must come right away, or else we're going to have chaos on the pitch, and then we're going to have a player who's going to be basically Looney Tunes on the field. I mean, that's the only logical way I can explain it, and then he'll go fall flat on the face. He might die on the field until they make these changes, and that's the one thing we have to avoid. It has to be avoided. So before we say goodbye, obviously tomorrow, the final group stage game, 7 o'clock Eastern in Philadelphia, the United States will take on Paraguay, and then it will be on Fox Sports 1. And then at 9 o'clock right away, it will be Colombia against Costa Rica, and that will be on Fox Sports 2. Both matches Spanish language on Univision. Let's talk about the United States, gentlemen. A win, and the United States goes to the quarterfinals. A draw, then they need help from Colombia to either defeat or draw against Costa Rica. Juan, how do you see the United States take on Paraguay? Because I'll be honest, Paraguay, you know, they're going to find a way to be spoilers here.
And it's a very difficult team. Like, they show against Colombia in the second half how dangerous they can be. They are coached by a savvy Ramon Diaz. That guy knows a lot of tricks. so the United States needs to be very careful and really try to get the goals that they need to secure the spot in the quarterfinals. When they had the chance to do it, like, don't miss goals tomorrow against Paraguay. It's a very solid defensive in the defense, and they kind of finding new players that actually can hold the ball in the midfield. I really like Almiron, and they're not going to have Oscar Romero because of a red card against Colombia. But Ayala, Almiron, and the striker Benitez and Derlis Gonzalez, they are like definitely players that you need to be very careful. I think Jurgen Klinsmann, I was reading some notes, told the players, like, guys, these guys are ruthless. They never give up. They never die on the field. So be prepared for a battle. I'm Colombian, and I grew up with these battles against Paraguay, and they are really tough. And once they had like a good group of players, they really connect, and they really fight for each other. So it's going to be interesting. I guess these kind of games are the kind of games that United States like to play as well. When Klinsmann let the team be brave and play with energy and fight instead of thinking too much on systems and, you know, all creative things that Klinsmann brings sometimes. So it's going to be a battle. It's a good test for the United States. But I really believe that the United States can win the game. And I don't see them losing this game, to be honest. I don't think that that is going to happen. And then the, for the Costa Rica Colombia, Colombia may rest some players. They need to rotate some players. So let's see. I don't think Costa Rica is going to be in a position to win. I mean, especially because the game is after the United States Paraguay one. So at that time, everything will be Costa Rica probably going to be disqualified of the tournament. So they're going to try to bring the best team they have against Colombia and play the best game. So, like some Colombian players, they need to prove that they are also able to play with the team, especially because you don't know what's going to happen later in the tournament, in the quarterfinals. Like Colombia might lose Baca or James, like injuries come and red cards and all that stuff. So you never know. So Colombia is going to be put players that they need to show the Pekerman that they can be starters as well.
Kartik, your final thoughts on the match? Thoughts on the United States?
Yeah, I think the United States has obviously on paper a good enough squad to handle this task, especially being at home. That having been said, that they're wildly inconsistent. I don't think the players know from match to match what they're going to see tactically. This Paraguay team has not been as strong as I necessarily thought they would be in this tournament. I'll say that. That having been said, you know, they're right there, right? I felt like they would beat Costa Rica in the first game. They didn't. In the game against Colombia, they were unfortunate. They created a lot of chances. You know, those chances you create against Colombia, they become goals against the United States because inevitably the United States will make a defensive error. Okay, countless defensive errors for the United States. The shape being broken. The U.S. has a. I'm not sure if it's that the players aren't tactically savvy. That's what some people say, but I believe it's because the manager has not imparted a consistent style of play with the players. So there's always tactical confusion. So I think Paraguay have a very good chance to get a draw in this match. Now, a draw would put the United States through. There's really a big mystery as to what kind of U.S. team will show up. It would be a massive failure of the United States to not advance. So I think the United States probably get the result they need. Players, obviously, to watch for Paraguay include Edgar Benitez, who we talked about before the tournament as being a potential impact player. And I think it would be nice to see some sort of good play in this game, good midfield play, a nice midfield battle. And maybe we'll see that in this match. I should remind folks that Juan Iturbe, who's Argentine-born, by the way, who many people thought would be the next Messi, is on the Paraguay squad. So maybe we'll see him get a run out tomorrow and do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Gentlemen, thank you very much, and talk to you guys next time. Let's see what happens tomorrow. And everyone, thank you for listening to tonight's Copa America Centenario Day 8 review show. For Carter Krishnar and for Juan Mesa, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Have a good night, everybody, and talk to you tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.